Ladies and gentlemen, please give me a warm Detroit Economic Club welcome for both John and Doug. And Doug will get us started first, and then we'll hear from John.
Great.
Good afternoon, everybody. All right, come on, you're not too sleepy after lunch, I hope. Thank you, Linda Apsey, a BLM board member, a relatively new friend. I want to also thank Steve Gregorian for inviting us all here today. Steve is just a terrific leader for you. And last but not least is John Ricolta. I don't get a chance to do this often. John is not only a BLM board member, but he, if you want to know somebody that cares and does more for the city of Detroit and the state of Michigan, I don't know who it is, and he is going to make a great ambassador for the United States of America, John Ricolta. Okay, so let's talk about how to make Michigan stronger. You know a little bit about my organization. We are all about trying to make Michigan a top 10 state. And here's why being top 10 matters a whole heck of a lot. If we were a top 10 state, we would have a lot more income as a state to be able to solve a lot of problems. You'd all be making about $10,000 more individually if we were a top 10 state. And we'd have a lot more people working in this state as well. So top 10 really matters. Okay, so we're at a crossroads though. The reality is that that's where Michigan finds itself right now. Let's go forward. And we have come a long way since 2009 when we hit the Great Recession, probably harder than any other state did. But the reality is that even though we've come back a lot in these last 5 to 10 years, is the fact is that we still are about average or slightly below average on a lot of the indicators that matter most. So this is, just to illustrate this a little bit, this is a chart, you don't need to read the detail. If Michigan was the same size we were back in the around 2000, we would be about $111 billion richer as a state in terms of income. If we were the state we were back around 2000, Michiganders would be earning about $50 billion more in personal income. And if we were what we used to be back in 1980, the same size, if we just grew at the same rate as the rest of the nation, we would have 2.5 million more people living in our state. I say all of this not to depress you. I say all of this to make you realize why top 10 matters, because we would have that many more customers and that much more wealth that we could use. Now, the reality is we still face some challenges going ahead. Job growth is starting to slow a tad. We also face challenges still without migration from the state. And we try to reflect on all of that as an organization to put together a plan and strategies for how we move Michigan forward to achieve that top 10 goal. One of the things that's important about it is that we base it on characteristics that top 10 states actually follow. And these are some of those. They're competitive, not always the lowest cost place to do business, but certainly in the ball game. They work cohesively when it comes to growing jobs and incomes as opposed to letting politics divide them. They leverage their distinctive assets. They're innovative places to grow. And most importantly, they follow these principles consistently year in and year out. They don't let election cycles get in the way of their goals of growing the economy. So our plan, based on all the research and the facts that we gather, has three very simple steps. First of all is, what do we need to do to stay competitive in this very competitive, hyper-competitive world economy that we're in? The good news is, this is where Michigan has made the most progress in the last half dozen years or more. We now are one of the most competitive places to do business, at least within the United States, on a tax and regulatory basis. The key, though, is that we've got to stay that way. A lot of the good fiscal practices that this administration and legislature have done have been practices, not policy. So the fact that they introduce multi-year budgets, that they do performance-based budgeting, that they've been paying down debt, these are not requirements, these are just practices that they followed. And our basic view is, let's not slide back. Let's keep those things in place by putting as many of those practices into law as we can. Second, let's make sure that we're doing things that invest in our growth, just like a business would, right? You can't grow if you don't make strategic investments in yourself. One area that we think is an issue is education and talent. So you can see here where Michigan stands in our overall education attainment level compared to other states, the percentage of our kids that are deemed to be college or career ready when they leave high school, the percentage of our kids that are enrolled in career and tech ed programs. All big issues for a state like Michigan. So what do we do about it? Well, we think there are three areas that we need to focus on. One is a holistic set of reforms to make K-12 stronger. That includes things like making sure that we maintain high standards for our students and tests that are tied to those, making sure we get more money to the classroom, more support for teachers, and that when we talk about accountability, that accountability doesn't end with the student and the teacher, but it's throughout the education system itself. Second is that we need to make sure that college is affordable. While we certainly need to make sure that we have more people pursuing and have an opportunity to go into career and tech ed, skilled trade type programs, the fact is that most jobs are still going to require a 4, 6, or even 8-year degree in the years ahead, and those are the jobs that also pay the most. So we've got to make sure that college is affordable, and we can't do that if we continue, for example, disinvesting in it as we have been over the last decade or more. Virtually no state has disinvested in higher education more than we have. And the third is that we've got to make sure that we have a job training system that gets people with the right skills for the right jobs at the right time in this state. Bottom line, we need both more educated and more skilled workers. It's not an either-or proposition. The other area where we need to invest is no big surprise, our infrastructure of all types. Michigan gets one of the lowest grades in the country. We need to make sure that we look at both broadband and water infrastructure and road infrastructure. And the reality, folks, is it's going to cost money to do that. There are a lot of best practices that we can put in place to make sure that we're not ripping up roads one week and ripping them up again when we decide to fix the pipes that are underneath them. But even if we make sure that all that systematic management occurs, it's still going to cost a lot more money. And that means either gas taxes or miles driven fees or water fees that are going to need to go up to pay for, frankly, years where we haven't been investing as much as we have been. The third step of our plan is about how do you grow faster than other states. So these first two steps are staying in the game. This is about outpacing what other states are doing. This is just an indicator that shows you that Michigan's focus on doing things like having a consistent approach to economic development hasn't always been the case. We vary a lot in terms of from year to year, administration to administration, what our approach is towards how aggressive we want to play in the economic development space. This chart shows you reason why that's important is because the blue bubbles on this chart are what we call established industries, like the automotive industry. The green bubbles are emerging industry sectors, largely those based on technology or the sciences. And what you see is that on the right-hand side are those sectors that are growing the fastest in relative to the rest of the country. And in Michigan, they're mainly established industries. The newer industry sectors we're not doing as well in, and yet if you look nationally, those are the ones that are growing the most and also tend to pay the most. So it's a reason why, for us at least, it's important for us to continue to keep our eye on how we diversify the economy in a smart way. The good news is, for Michigan, we have a lot of assets to work with. So if we just get more cohesive and competitive in terms of economic development, and if we take advantage of some of these assets that we have, for example, engineering. We have more engineering professionals in Michigan than most other states. We've got some great educational programs. This is an area where there's going to be continued need in the future, and it's an area where Michigan could excel. We're building a new bridge to Canada, a new trade corridor that we could take advantage of in terms of making sure that we grow the logistics industry that could be spawned from having that trade corridor really come about. So there's great opportunities for Michigan. It's just that we've got to be strategic to take advantage of them. So I want to leave you with a video here, I think, which will show. Can you guys cue that up?
I have a question. Who wants to go first to win? Who wants to grow our business? Who wants to make more money? Who wants more job opportunities? If you want Michigan to compete and become a top 10 state, raise your hand. Together, we've turned Michigan around and started moving forward. Now help us build a stronger Michigan than ever. Raise your hand at strongermichigan.com.
So this is the thing. Business folks can't do this alone. Government can't do this alone. Everybody needs to be part of it because if nothing else, we need to have the political will and support to make the kind of things that we're talking about here happen, and that's where all of you can get engaged. We've made it easy to go to a website, strongermichigan.com. It'll outline for you all the ways that you can do as much or as little as you want, but to lend your help for the kinds of things that we're talking about here today. So let me stop there. John, if you'd like to come up, we can do a little bit of question and answer, and then we'll take some of your questions from the floor too. Thanks very much.
It's great to be sitting up here with Doug. As you can see, there's been a significant amount of legwork that has gotten to this point in time. But Doug, you know, it's all very general, and probably most of the people here, if they don't completely understand it, at least have a sense that we're going to have to change as a state in order to remain successful in moving forward. So the first area I'd like to sort of ask a question on, that is K-12 education. You know, I was and still am the co-chair of the Coalition for the Future of Detroit School Children, but you also know that while Detroit is a marker for the progress and the quality and the achievement of K-12 education, really the state of Michigan has not fared all that much better. So what can people in the audience do to focus on the crisis that we're now having with K-12 education?
Well, I think the first thing, John, is to realize there's a crisis. You know, when we talk about K-12 performance, I think too often people think that it's a problem that's isolated to places like Detroit or Pontiac or maybe some rural areas in the state. And the reality is that even in the best school districts in Michigan, the percentage of our kids that are deemed to be college or career ready, you would be appalled at. 40%, 50%. So, and you can't get to the numbers that I showed you up there, 30th in education attainment, in the 30s for the percentage of kids in career and tech ed. You can't get to those numbers with only a few districts underperforming. So I think the first thing, John, is realizing this is a problem that the whole state faces, that we all have got to understand that it's not so much about how we're doing relative to how we've done in the past, but how we're doing relative to other states. And then finally, getting involved in supporting the kind of reforms that we think are needed at the state level and at the local level to make that happen. And we can talk about some of those more if you'd like.
Yeah, as you said, I have witnessed this myself for the last 4 years. I was not involved in K-12 education at all, had the opportunity to get really deeply involved. And I can give you my assessment, number one. There is no voice in the state of Michigan that everybody trusts. There are lines that have been drawn in the sand. On one side of the equation is traditional public education. On the other side of the equation is strictly charter school. And we haven't found a way as a state to have a dialogue about why we need both and what kind of reforms we have to have. That's point number one. Point number two is, I know specifically about Detroit, and the inequities would shock you. And I'm going to just refer to one, and that is how special education is funded. So as you know, every child in America has the right to be educated. And in terms of special education, it's more costly. On average, a special ed kid requires $40,000 a year. Detroit Public Schools has 8,000 special ed kids, ranging from the severely disabled all the way up to just mildly, perhaps like a speech impediment or dyslexia. But all 8,000 of those kids on an FTE basis cost $40,000 per year. The funding available for Detroit Public Schools to fund those kids is only $30,000 a year. But there is a federal mandate that says you must follow this prescription. So where does the $10,000 gap come from? Most of you don't know this. It comes from all the other 37,000 kids who are, their education quality is reduced by the tune of $40 million a year so that they can fund special education because it's required by law. And so what's the net result of that? The net result of that is that Detroit kids have the lowest classroom spend of any kid in the state. And you wonder why we're only at 9% proficiency when you're spending the least amount on the kids who are most at risk. That's just one issue, and I could sit up here for 10 hours giving you another 20, 30 issues that are just like that one. And until we as a community stand up and start to fix these inequities, we're not going to have any progress. Want to comment?
Well, I mean, I agree totally, and I think that if you, you know, the other thing that we've got to start doing is we've got to make sure that we stay at this year after year. I mean, one of the challenges that we see compared to places like Massachusetts and Tennessee and Florida that have really seen big gains in improvement, and they face many of the same challenges we do in terms of society conditions and social issues and the like. What they've done is they've had educators and business groups working together consistently year after year. And we in Michigan have tend to be more episodic, John. We get involved in things and then we pull back. And this we can't let happen.
Let's switch to infrastructure. So I'd like to start out by asking this question. Why is infrastructure so important? What's the difference of a bumpy road or a smooth road?
Well, I don't know. To me, it looks like how much do we care about ourselves to invest in ourselves? I mean, how would we expect to have businesses or people want to move here if it looks like we're not even taking care of our own house? And let alone the fact that in order for us to have safe drinking water, in order for us to be able to move products and goods around in a global economy, that these are absolutely critical. But to me, it's an embarrassment, John. Let's go back. One of the biggest challenges we face as a state is our demographics. We are a state that is getting older. We are not attracting people here to replace those that leave. And yet we're expecting to grow a lot of good paying jobs so that we can all have more personal incomes. Well, we're not going to be able to do that if we don't have people looking to Michigan as the place that they want to come to. And I think infrastructure is the first thing you notice.
And do you think there's any hope that we're going to get either Lansing or Washington to come together and to figure out how we're going to solve this dilemma?
Well, you were down in Washington with us last week when we were making the pitch down there, and I think what we heard is maybe a few little things this year, but probably nothing really big until after the election. And I don't think it's going to be difficult. I think it's going to be hard for us at the state level to have the political will to do something big unless we're incentivized by Washington to go chase some federal money for us to do it. Having said all of that, we need to do it, and we need to realize that we cannot do this on the cheap. What we did a couple of years ago when we passed the road package that, you know, everybody's so, you know, a lot of folks up in Lansing are patting themselves on the back for, we only raised half as much money as we knew we needed to fix the roads, and half of it came from the general fund budget, which means that we're basically using the checkbook that pays for your college tuition for your kids and police and fire protection and all the other day-to-day stuff to make sure that we can fill the potholes in the roads. It's an unsustainable solution. It was a bad solution then, and we're going to continue to pay the price for it until we step up.
We are one of two states in the country that taxes fuel, and then instead of spending the sales tax that's collected on fuel and sends it off to education. So a good part of K through 12 education today is financed, matter of fact, most of it, by sales tax, including sales tax on gas sales. And yet our infrastructure is unfunded. And the reason I mention this is because if we're going to have a solution in this state, it's going to have to be a much more comprehensive solution. We're looking to fix, as Doug said, episodic issues. Give us a little bit more money here, when in fact the entire funding model, in my view, is completely broken. And so that opens up the next door, and that's fiscal stability. It's not a very exciting topic, yet it's a big priority for BLM. Why don't you explain a little bit why fiscal stability is so important, what kind of certainty it can bring?
Well, so let me give you one example. So one of the things that we would like to make sure is in law, and it is in law to some degree right now, is the idea of creating a fiscal note for every piece of legislation that the legislature considers before they pass it. Sounds simple, right? And what a fiscal note does is it basically estimates what the cost is of that legislation on government, on people, on businesses, so that they understand the consequences, basically, of legislation that's being proposed. You would think that would be a no-brainer, that is just the easiest thing in the world to try to get done. But a lot of folks in the legislature don't like that. because it will slow down the process, they believe. It will constrain their ability, they believe, to respond to different situations because they may not have all the data right in front of them before they want to act. Our reaction is, that's a good thing. Maybe we actually will pass less legislation. Maybe we will be more thoughtful about what we're passing and understand the fiscal consequences of things before we pull the trigger. That's an example of putting into law something right now that we think would just ensure that Michigan can sustain fiscal stability for a long time to come, which frankly also helps us be able to attract and retain people because it makes sure that the tax structure and the cost of doing business in Michigan is also stable.
Not to mention the tremendous unfunded pension liability that the state faces today. Mobility. So you mentioned the auto business and how important it is to the state. And so we have these, what I call triumvirate of technology that's taking place in autos, electrification, mobility, and autonomous driving. And so what does that allow, or what does that, I should say, what kind of opportunities does that present for our state?
Well, you know, John, we've always tried to diversify Michigan's economy, and we tried to do it deliberately in some cases that didn't pan out so well. This really gives us an opportunity to build on an industry that we are absolutely dominant in, the automotive industry, but be able to then bring in the technology companies and a lot of the new application and software developers that see the opportunity to transform the automobile into a vehicle for personal mobility regardless of your ability to drive. And that's going to open up opportunities for people to want to be in Michigan that maybe would have never thought to be in Michigan before. And it has a second effect of making our core industry, that the industry that is signature of Michigan, all of a sudden maybe more attractive to a lot of young people and millennials that are so important for us to keep here. So it's not just the direct economic impact, it's also the image maker, I think, that it has for the state.
And we heard that you are the chair of the American Center for Mobility.
Yes.
Why don't you talk a little bit about that and perhaps the fact that it's right now the place to be in the United States of America.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little biased, but I really do believe that Michigan right now, this is one area where everybody's come together. I talked earlier about being cohesive. This has been something that's been so great to see because we realize that we have got to dominate this space. And a signature initiative that the state and the governor really led is the idea of creating something at Willow Run Airport called the American Center for Mobility. It is the largest testing facility for autonomous and connected vehicles anywhere in the United States, probably in the world. It is a place where you can do it safely under controlled conditions. Think about the accidents that have recently happened with autonomous vehicles. We actually think this is an area where maybe a little more government oversight and regulation wouldn't be a bad thing before we start these things kind of just flying all over the roads. And this is the place to do it and to get it those vehicles certified so that they will be things that people will trust and operate safely.
So BLM has done a tremendous amount of study, research on what needs to take place. But as you said earlier, you had that special word up there called cohesive or cohesion. Is this plan and this message meant for our politicians in Lansing? And is there a role that it can play in the upcoming elections for governor, attorney general? We have a Senate seat up, and of course, every congressional seat in the state of Michigan is up for election this year.
Yeah, well, I mean, we spend a lot of time, you should know, just sitting down with folks that are running for office or are already in office, briefing them on the information that we gather, the facts that we gather, the strategies that we come up with, and we frankly tell each one of them, steal as much of this as you want. You can put it in your own words, put it under your own platform. We don't care who gets credit for it. We just want the job to get done. But the reality is that we can only do so much, John. I mean, you understand that more than anybody. Is, you know, for the elected leaders to do what needs to be done, they need to feel that they have the public's support to do it. And we talked about infrastructure a little bit ago. I think a reason why the road bill didn't pass the way we wanted it to is because we did not make the case collectively that the money was needed and it was going to be put to the best use. So we all have to own that a little bit. We can't just point the finger at Lansing and say, you failed. We all collectively failed at that. And that's where this idea of directing you to a website, strongermichigan.com, is something we wanted to leave you with, because there are ways there for you to get engaged, whether it's something as simple as calling your legislator. I can't tell you, if a legislator gets 10 or 15 phone calls on an issue, they think it's a crisis, and they will react. So you diminish your own power by dismissing the idea of individual action, and that's part of what our message is today.
And I'd just like to build on that just a bit. We as a company are able to travel the globe building large facilities for customers who are investing in those communities. And the one thing that we see consistently over and over and over again is the cohesiveness in the states like South Carolina and Louisiana and Arizona. Their politicians seem to be able to put aside all of the differences, that 60 or 70% of the stuff that they don't agree on, and they're able to concentrate on that 20 or 30% of the things that they do, and they outsell us, they out-hustle us, and they provide far more benefits to their ultimate customer. And that just doesn't mean incentives. That means developing a culture where a company feels that they're wanted, that they're needed, and the state will work together to keep them competitive. And so my final question to you, and then we'll open up to the audience, is this word competitive. We talked about being cohesive. We talked about being consistent. And now we're going to talk a little bit about being competitive. What does it mean to be competitive on global stage?
John, I think part of it is wanting it. It's the desire to be as good or better than those that we're competing against. And maybe let me give you an example I was thinking about as you were just talking a second ago. Right now, there are cities across the country competing to get Amazon, the second Amazon headquarters. And we were one of those communities that wanted it. We didn't make the final cut. But as we were going through that process, it seemed to me that there was a lot of nip-gnawing in the media and in the public domain here about whether it was even a good idea to go after a second Amazon headquarters. What would the cost of it be? What would the extra traffic look like? Of course, you know, my attitude as a growth person was, bring it on. I mean, this is a great thing for us. I can tell you in other places today, I know, you know, again, because I get down there a fair amount, Raleigh, North Carolina is in the competition for it. They have no qualms at all about it. There is no nip-gnawing in the newspaper about whether it's a good or a bad idea. None of the politicians are questioning whether or not we really should go after Amazon. It's all in. They are all in. And that is our competitor. That's the competition we are up against. So we can come, you know, stay around and we can have debates about whether we should play the game or not, or we can go all in and we can go get it. And certainly I would be biased to say we ought to be all in.
And there's not an epilogue. We're all in business here, and we know that when we don't accomplish a goal, a good business will sit down and say, why? And they'll learn from that. That's the best thing that comes out of failure, learning how to be different. And we didn't do that here in this state. For whatever reason, we weren't willing on a public basis to sit down and say, why did we lose? Not only did we lose, we didn't even make the top 20. We're somewhere competitively between 20 and 250. We don't have any idea where that is. Is it 50? Is it 100? And how can we take our state to a top 10 if we don't have the will to sit down, you know, labor, management, Democrat, Republican, county, city, rural, and say, why did we not do better? And this is the one thing that the Japanese taught my company in the 80s, and there is significant value in figuring out why you lost. That's what they call continuous improvement. So with that, Linda, we're going to turn it over to you. I understand there's a number of questions from the audience, and so let's see how many of those we can get through.
Yep, great. Thank you, Doug. Thank you, John, for your comments and getting us started. And throughout the meeting, some of you have been submitting questions, and so I'll take some of those and direct them to John and or Doug. I'd ask you guys, if you want to jump in on one of the others, I'll try to maybe direct some of them to one of you or the other. But John, maybe you could get us started with some of your thoughts. How worried should Michigan businesses be about the threat of or an actual trade war with China or other countries? How concerned should we be?
We should be very concerned. And the question is, should we be concerned short-term or long-term? And what I mean by that is $800 billion deficit sustainable forever? What happens to all that money that we send to China and Germany and Canada and Mexico, where we have huge trade deficits? What happens to that money? It comes back here and it buys our assets. How long is that sustainable? So that's the big concern on a long-term basis. On a short-term basis, yeah, it does cost us more. And every company is going to have to find a better way to compete. And there are a number of opinions out there as to whether we should be concerned on a longer-term basis or just be focused on short-term. Our company has already been hit with large steel increases, all right? Some of them are provided for in our contracts and some of them aren't. And we're going to have to, as a company, figure out a way to overcome the 15 or 20% cost in structural steel today. But we have to, as a community, come together and we have to have a meaningful debate, not a 50 or 60 word soundbite that sounds great because you've appealed to a small constituency, a special interest. See, I think that that's part of the problem in America today, that we've all become so special interest that we're not willing to use the S word. And that's a word that my dad taught me when I was a young boy, and it said, you have to sacrifice to be able to win going forward. If you're not willing to sacrifice today, you can't win.
Great. Thanks, John. Doug, this is for you. You've talked a lot this... You talked a lot this morning about obviously the state of Michigan needs to have sort of this passion, this drive. But are there any trends or specific policies that you're seeing out there in the corporate world that would sort of help or hinder Michigan as we try to attract businesses to our state?
Well, I mean, what I see is just a continued escalation of competition. I see other states adopting new programs and new strategies every day. I think that what bothers me about our culture sometimes in Michigan is we tend to only evaluate our progress by how we've done in the past, how Michigan's done in the past, as opposed to how we are relatively doing versus those places that we're most often competing with. And if the problem with that is that those places then pass us by, they leapfrog us in the escalating race to get jobs and investment. And so, you know, my approach would be to say, make sure that you're always benchmarking yourself against the best, not yourself. And it's the same thing you would do in business. You're not going to celebrate your business by being, you know, 10% better than you were last year if your competition got 50% better last year. It's the same thing for states and communities.
Great. This is for both of you, a little bit of perspective. We talked about Michigan and the state, but let's bring it back a little bit more local, talk about the city of Detroit. You know, as we all can celebrate and we can see a lot of the progress that's being made in the city of Detroit, and we often say, you know, how Detroit goes, so goes the state. But what will the future of the city of Detroit need to include in order to compete for new business and grow our resident population? What are some of the fundamental principles you see that need to happen in city of Detroit?
The most important thing is it needs talent. A business is not going to go anywhere where there isn't talent. And we have this talent shortage. And there isn't any other place that it's more exemplified than here in Detroit. We have 120,000 kids between the age of 5 and 18. Every year we graduate or matriculate 10,000 kids. And if you were to just use proficiency as a measurement, only 10 or 15% of those kids are proficient. And it's already been shown that if you're not proficient in math, English, and arithmetic, there's no place to go. There's no trade union. Do you realize today that in order to become a skilled tradesman in the electrical union, you have to be able to do an algebra equation? Even the skilled trades are way past adding and subtracting. And so if we don't figure out how to fix that talent gap, we can't possibly compete.
I would just say, Linda, that we need more people to fill that gap also moving here. We just don't have enough people in Michigan to be able to fill the volume of jobs that I think our businesses are going to be able to create. in the near to midterm. And that means what we have to do is we've got to be a place that people want to come to. When we grew the most as a state, it was back in the 1950s and 60s when the automotive industry was seen around the country as the place you want to be a part of. And people moved here from all over the country. Well, we need to have the same thing again, and maybe mobility will be a part of that. I don't know if it'll be the whole answer, but it's a reason why it's so important for us to leverage more of those assets that I talked about earlier, whether it's engineering talent or our logistics trade border or whatever, that people see this is the vibrant place that they want to be to have their career.
Great. Southeast Michigan has struggled for years on a regional transit plan. From your each of your own perspectives, how important is regional transit from a business or corporate perspective?
It's number three. Education is one, infrastructure is two, and if you want to include that as part of infrastructure, then it's the number two issue that we have. How do you expect people who can't afford a car to get to a job? If you recall, 3 years ago, I went on that famous bus trip with a family who wanted their kids to go to charter school. And it was just shocking. I woke up at 6 o'clock in the morning, ended up at their house at 6:15. It took this woman, Mrs. Robinson, an hour and 30 minutes by bus to get her kids to charter school. And she repeated it in the afternoon. And that's where we already have a bus system. We need regional transit. And if there's five communities in Oakland County and six in Macomb that don't want to be part of it, fine. The leadership of those counties have to find a way to accommodate mass transit. That's my feeling on it.
Okay. So another big issue these days is immigration. Do you think encouraging immigration into the state could help boost the state's economy and address some of the fundamental issues we have?
Yes, yes, and yes.
All the growth in the state came through immigration. I don't think there's a person in this, there might be a few Native Americans here, but I will bet you 99% of all the people in this room in one way, shape, or form, came from a family that immigrated to this country in the last 150 years. The question becomes, are we going to have legal immigration, or are we going to just have open borders? And we aren't able to have that debate for some reason. We're just not. Our politicians are into identity politics, and you're either on one side of the line or the other, and we have to stop that. We have to start to talk about the policies and the laws and the direction our country and our state are going to go in. And I think that Nolan Finley, who's sitting over here today, I don't know how many of you read his article, his opinion, on Sunday, but it basically chastised two candidates running for governor in a primary right now about not focusing on the issues and getting into this negative name-calling identity politics. And I, in fact, wrote an email to both of those candidates, said, I'm not interested in the fact that Brian Calley's consultants screwed up and put a couple of pages of somebody else's signatures in. I want to know what you're going to do about K-12 education. I don't want some general statement. I want to know specifically. I want to know specifically what we're going to do about infrastructure. I want to know specifically what we're going to do about competition and about being cohesive and building a coalition after the election that can emulate what they're doing in South Carolina and Louisiana, where we can all be cohesively working for the better of the state.
Okay, we're gonna have one last question that was submitted today by one of our student participants, and after we're done with this question, we'll move to the lightning round. And obviously, by its name, it's meant to be quick and punchy, and it's a fun way just to get a little bit of insight and perspective into both Doug and John. So our last question from one of our students: how can educators themselves improve the education system and contribute to the opportunities for all?
I have two simple things. I believe in merit pay. It's the way our country was built. I think you have to have merit pay. That's number one. I think that would unlock an awful lot. Number two is that, and I say this to the high school kids a lot, at the time, in the 1 BC took 1,000 years for knowledge to double. Today it takes 12 months. You have to learn all the time, continuously, or you fall behind in your profession. And this the same goes for teachers. We're not spending enough money training them after they get out of school.
All right. All right, so we're going to move to our lightning round, and we'll just kind of bounce back and forth here. So, John, I will start with you. What's something on your bucket list?
I want to go to the South Pole.
Doug?
I don't have a bucket list.
What?
I know, I just don't. I'm
Doug
sorry.
Needs a bucket list.
No bucket list.
All right. So, Doug, who would you like to have lunch with?
Roy Williams, the head coach of North Carolina Tar Heels.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Know your audience here? No, just kidding.
I know. Sorry.
John?
I don't nearly have enough time to have lunch with my wife. I'd like to have lunch with my wife much more often.
Good answer. John, what's your favorite song?
Pride and Joy. Pride and Joy. Yes, sir.
Doug?
All or Nothing by Frank Sinatra.
All right, I think we might know the answer to this one for Doug. What's your favorite team growing up?
Philadelphia Phillies.
Oh, okay. John?
Detroit Red Wings.
All right. What's your best sport?
Golf.
I was not good in any sport.
John, the last book you read?
Accidental Superpower.
The trilogy of Joseph Stalin.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. Sorry.
And John, one of your favorite movies?
Color Purple.
The Godfather.
Doug, what's your go-to website?
You know, I don't think I have one. It's kind of like my bucket list. I don't have one. Sorry, Linda.
Got to work on Doug here. All right, no, John, what's your go-to website?
My favorite website is Google search. It's my brain cap.
Doug, one way you disconnect?
Reading. I do reading a lot, and also just sometimes getting out for a walk for half an hour or so.
John?
I don't.
You don't ever?
Shocking.
We're not surprised. All right, John, a favorite vacation spot?
Italy, because of the Renaissance.
Yeah, Italy. That'd be my list.
Great. All right, describe Detroit in one word, John.
Dynamic.
Tough.
All right, so this is a little bit of a throwback question. Imagine yourself as your 25-year-old self. And you can take a few more words to describe this. What advice would you give to yourself? Doug, we'll start with you.
Yeah, well, I told the students earlier today, the word that comes to mind is chill, because by 25, I had already become hyperventilating over the need to kind of make up for the years before that I screwed off too much. And I was going to probably drive myself into hyper anxiety, so chill.
John?
Passion. I think that once you have passion for something, and then you combine that with the drive and continuous learning, there's nothing that you can't accomplish.
Great. Well, that rounds it up, and fitting that we end in the word passion, because obviously your passion, both of you, for the state of Michigan comes through. So thank you both.
John and Doug, thank you both for a fascinating conversation. Linda Apsey, terrific job as presiding officer. So, all right, ladies and gentlemen, it's time to help our CRA students graduate. If your schedule permits, would you kindly network with these terrific graduates as they show off their networking and elevator pitches? CRA graduates, we're here to help you. Be confident and show us what you learned. Thank you, everybody. This meeting is adjourned.